This is Molly Hemingway of The Federalist. Join me, my husband Mark of Real Clear Investigations, Kyle Mann of the Babylon Bee, San Francisco Archbishop Salvatore Cordiglione, Lutheran Church Missouri Synod President Matt Harrison, and others for the 2023 Making the Case Conference, Friday, June 16th and Saturday, June 17th at Concordia University, Chicago. Learn more at issuesetc.org. Making the Case, June 16th and 17th in Chicago. issuesetc.org.
There's definitely a contrast between the Trump presidency, where it was almost daily, sometimes knockdown, drag out with the press, the president in there, skin in the game, making comments, making news, tweeting, and addressing the press directly. And what we find in the Biden administration, very quiet, a quiet White House, but also a White House that doesn't deal with the press as much as it possibly can. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Joining us to talk about the current state of journalism and covering the Trump White House, Deb Saunders. She's a syndicated columnist, a fellow for the Discovery Institute Chapman Center for Citizen Leadership. She spent more than 30 years covering politics, including as a White House correspondent and columnist for the Las Vegas Review-Journal. She hosts the podcast Covering Trump. Deb, welcome.
Hi, Todd. How are you today?
Very well. We have had your husband on this program as a regular guest for close to 30 years. What's it like being married to the energetic, effervescent Wesley Smith?
Well, let me tell you how we met. When we first met, he was a Phil and Talk radio host. He was very liberal. And I was very conservative, writing for the Los Angeles Daily News. And now he's more conservative than I am. So things have changed. He's got a lot of energy. He says what changed him was moving to San Francisco, that nobody could stay a liberal in San Francisco at any rate. So I've watched him carve out an issue that nobody cared about and make people understand why it's so important that we don't abandon people when they're sick and that people are there to help each other. So I'm very proud of everything he's done.
How would you assess the current state of journalism in the United States?
I'm so depressed. I can't tell you. I've been watching something happening in newspapers that depresses me a lot. There was a time that you heard a few years ago where young journalists were saying, we don't have to tell both sides. There's no need for that. And they said it was just too balanced. And you can see it in stories you read. Now, there was a story in the Washington Post a few weeks ago, and it was about a transgender kid now named Henry, and all the stuff that the kid went through. And he ended up killing himself. And his mother blamed all the people who weren't supportive enough. And you read this story. He was an adult. He worked for the Human Rights Campaign. And it goes on and on about every accommodation that was made for Henry to make Henry feel good about everything that happened. His mother was completely on board. His school was on board. He gets a job with the Human Rights Campaign. And then she blames the fact that he killed himself on people who had really nothing to do with his life. I was just shocked to read a story where there was no other opinion that maybe, for example, mention of the higher suicide rate of transgender people or just some of the problems that people who have transitioned, what they've dealt with. How can you write a big, long story and not get into that? But this happens over and over again. Newspapers are just, they're really becoming more propagandistic than they've ever been in my life.
So it's changed, obviously. Do you think it's a fundamental change in how journalists think about their craft?
Absolutely. And I don't know that I would use the word craft, Todd. There used to be a care about things. So when I worked at the San Francisco Chronicle, one day there was a young man, Eddie Gwen Araujo, who killed himself. He was transgender. And I remember going, I was doing a hit on a local TV station. The guys who were working there, they're like, Deborah, you've got to write about this. Like, as basically, you're the only person who could write about some of the problems with a teenager. He was a boy who passed himself off as a girl, had sex with some boys who were furious and killed him. They were tried for murder, as they should have been. And I'm not defending anything that happened. At the time, I was sort of thinking that we should be warning kids that this is not something that you want to do necessarily if you are biologically male, tell boys that you are a girl and then let them find out otherwise. Obviously, what happened, Eddie Juan Araujo didn't deserve, but that was something that people believed back then. People looked at the issues of it. And now everybody takes for granted that the day a kid says, I'm a boy or I'm a girl, that everything is supposed to change and accommodate that. And I don't think that kids are better off for it. And I just feel that people were more adult and skeptical about the claims that we're hearing from certain lobbies. And to me, that's the example that stands out for me the most.
We interviewed Batya Unger-Sargon of Newsweek. She had written a book last year or a year before. And she said that journalism went from being a predominantly blue-collar vocation to a more white-collar, Ivy League elitist vocation. And that's part of the problem here. Do you agree?
You know, I don't agree with that. I know people who say that it used to be a blue-collar vocation. And sure, maybe back in the day, but I first started working for a newspaper in 1987. And everybody around me was college-educated. When I went to the Chronicle, one of the editors was Yale. Another one went to Harvard with JFK. I mean, these were Ivy League people. So I know that there are people who worked in small town papers and had high school degrees and not college. But I think that they're more the exception to the rule. Certainly in the big cities, we're talking about college educated people.
We're talking with Deb Saunders about the current state of journalism and covering the Trump White House. On the other side, why does she think so many Beltway journalists seem out of touch with many Americans?
Solid, serious, substantive. You're listening to Issues Etc.
I am beautiful because I am fearfully and wonderfully made.
I am accepted because I'm a part of His family through Jesus' shed blood.
Unity Lutheran School in East St. Louis, Illinois, shines the light of Christ in one of the most impoverished cities in America. Learn how to support their mission work at unityesl.org. Unityesl.org.
Today, with the help of the Holy Spirit, I say yes to God in His ways.
Register today. The 2023 Lutherans for Life National Conference is October 11th through the 13th at the Holiday Inn Cincinnati Airport in Erlanger, Kentucky. The conference includes visits to the Ark Encounter and Creation Museum. Online registration is open now with early bird pricing at lutheransforlife.org/conference. Lutherans for Life, equipping Lutherans and their neighbors to be gospel-motivated voices for life. lutheransforlife.org.
There's definitely a contrast between the Trump presidency, where it was almost daily, sometimes knockdown, drag out with the press, the president in there, skin in the game, making comments, making news, tweeting, and addressing the press directly. And what we find in the Biden administration, very quiet, a quiet White House, but also a White House that doesn't deal with the press as much as it possibly can. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Joining us to talk about the current state of journalism and covering the Trump White House, Deb Saunders. She's a syndicated columnist, a fellow for the Discovery Institute Chapman Center for Citizen Leadership. She spent more than 30 years covering politics, including as a White House correspondent and columnist for the Las Vegas Review-Journal. She hosts the podcast Covering Trump. Deb, welcome.
Hi, Todd. How are you today?
Very well. We have had your husband on this program as a regular guest for close to 30 years. What's it like being married to the energetic, effervescent Wesley Smith?
Well, let me tell you how we met. When we first met, he was a Phil and Talk radio host. He was very liberal. And I was very conservative, writing for the Los Angeles Daily News. And now he's more conservative than I am. So things have changed. He's got a lot of energy. He says what changed him was moving to San Francisco, that nobody could stay a liberal in San Francisco at any rate. So I've watched him carve out an issue that nobody cared about and make people understand why it's so important that we don't abandon people when they're sick, and that people are there to help each other. So I'm very proud of everything he's done.
How would you assess the current state of journalism in the United States?
I'm so depressed. I can't tell you. I've been watching something happening in newspapers that depresses me a lot. There was a time that you heard a few years ago where young journalists were saying, we don't have to tell both sides. There's no need for that. And they said it was just too balanced. And you can see it in stories you read. Now, there was a story in the Washington Post a few weeks ago, and it was about a transgender kid now named Henry and all the stuff that the kid went through. And he ended up killing himself. And his mother blamed all the people who weren't supportive enough. And you read this story. He was an adult. He worked for the Human Rights Campaign. And it goes on and on about every accommodation that was made for Henry to make Henry feel good about everything that happened. His mother was completely on board. His school was on board. He gets a job with the Human Rights Campaign. And then she blames the fact that he killed himself on people who had really nothing to do with his life. I was just shocked to read a story where there was no other opinion that maybe, for example, mention of the higher suicide rate of transgender people or just some of the problems that people who have transitioned, what they've dealt with. How can you write a big, long story and not get into that? But this happens over and over again. Newspapers are just, they're really becoming more propagandistic than they've ever been in my life.
So it's changed, obviously. Do you think it's a fundamental change in how journalists think about their craft?
Absolutely. And I don't know that I would use the word craft, Todd. There used to be a care about things. So when I worked at the San Francisco Chronicle, one day there was a young man, Eddie Gwen Araujo, who killed himself. He was transgender. And I remember going, I was doing a hit on a local TV station. The guys who were working there, they're like, Deborah, you've got to write about this. Like, as basically you're the only person who could write about some of the problems with a teenager. He was a boy who passed himself off as a girl, had sex with some boys who were furious and killed him. They were tried for murder, as they should have been. And I'm not defending anything that happened. At the time, I was sort of thinking that we should be warning kids that this is not something that you want to do necessarily. If you are biologically male, tell boys that you are a girl and then let them find out otherwise. Obviously, what happened, Eddie Gwen Araujo didn't deserve, but that was something that people believed back then. People looked at the issues of it. And now everybody takes for granted that the day a kid says, I'm a boy or I'm a girl, that everything is supposed to change and accommodate that. And I don't think that kids are better off for it. And I just feel that people were more adult and skeptical about the claims that we're hearing from certain lobbies. And to me, that's the example that stands out for me the most.
We interviewed Batya Unger Sargon of Newsweek. She had written a book last year, a year before, and she said that journalism went from being a predominantly blue-collar vocation to a more white-collar, Ivy League elitist vocation, and that's part of the problem here. Do you agree?
You know, I don't agree with that. I know people who say that it used to be a blue-collar vocation, and sure, maybe back in the day, but I first started working for a newspaper in 1987, and everybody around me was college educated. When I went to the Chronicle, one of the editors was Yale. Another one went to Harvard with JFK. I mean, these were Ivy League people. So I know that there are people who worked in small town papers and had high school degrees and not college, but I think that they're more the exception to the rule. Certainly in the big cities, we're talking about college educated people.
We're talking with Deb Saunders about the current state of journalism and covering the Trump White House. On the other side, why does she think so many Beltway journalists seem out of touch with many Americans?
Solid. Serious. Substantive. You're listening to Issues Etc.
I am beautiful because I am fearfully and wonderfully made.
I am accepted because I'm a part of his family through Jesus' shed blood.
Unity Lutheran School in East St. Louis, Illinois, shines the light of Christ in one of the most impoverished cities in America. Learn how to support their mission work at unityesl.org. Unityesl.org.
Today with the help. God in His ways.
Register today. The 2023 Lutherans for Life National Conference is October 11th through the 13th at the Holiday Inn Cincinnati Airport in Erlanger, Kentucky. The conference includes visits to the Ark Encounter and Creation Museum. Online registration is open now with early bird pricing at lutheransforlife.org/conference. Lutherans for Life, equipping Lutherans and their neighbors to be gospel-motivated voices for life. lutheransforlife.org.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking about the current state of journalism and covering the Trump White House. Deb Saunders is our guest. She spent 30 years covering politics, including as a White House correspondent. Deb, why do so many Beltway journalists seem out of touch with so many Americans?
Well, Washington is a bubble. The White House press corps, it's a bubble. And when you're covering the White House, you have this crazy beat. It's a beat of everything, but it's also a beat within the lens of the White House. And you're trying to get stories a certain way that sort of justify your existence. What your paper's paying or your TV station's paying a lot of money if you're to be there. And so you're trying to get a certain kind of story that works for your organization. But that's not necessarily what people want to read or hear. And I think that sometimes people get caught up in the scoops. It's great to get a scoop. I love getting scoops. But does it really matter that much if you got something 2 minutes before someone else, to your readers, to your viewers? I don't think so. So I think that there are these prizes that we have where journalists recognize what they do, but it isn't something that matters to the public.
Give us an overview of the White House press corps.
Well, you know, the White House press corps is generally very liberal. Most of the people there, this is their dream. Covering the White House is an amazing experience. If you watch the briefings, and I watch at least one briefing a week just to see how things are working, you know, you'll see the people in the first two front rows, and they're big media, their wire services, their networks. Obviously, if you're with a big paper, you're in the front. But I was in the back of the room, and I have a different viewpoint than someone who, if you're watching a briefing, because in the back of the room, it's just a different experience. Most of you are with a smaller news organization. You're more likely to ask a question that has to do with your readers or your viewers. I never competed with the New York Times or the Washington Post. I wanted to get stories that were of interest to Las Vegas Review-Journal readers. And so I think that you'll see that more. But it's a competitive group, but also it's a group that has to stick together in certain ways, because you want to make sure that whoever the president is in the administration, that they feel answerable to the press. That's not happening a lot with Joe Biden, by the way. And if you watch the briefings, you see people are fighting back more. Now, let me just say, Joe Biden's people are very professional. I covered the Biden White House for 5 weeks. I also covered the campaign and the transition period. They're very professional and they're tough. You didn't see a lot of questions about Hunter Biden for a long time. And the reason you didn't see it is, as we know, there was bias, and that when the New York Times first reported on the laptop, a lot of papers wouldn't touch it. Then later, after Biden's elected, the New York Times comes out and says, yeah, maybe there is more to this story. And so you've seen that evolve, but there are consequences. They're going to remember who asked the questions about Hunter Biden. We talk about PAC journalism. Basically, it's easier to be wrong in the PAC than to be right alone. You'll have more access. And people always talk about how the press are different with Biden and Trump. Well, let's remember that Donald Trump could be pretty provocative with the press. And there's nothing he loved more than to rattle the cage, right? That was his trademark. He loved doing it. There were people like Jim Acosta at CNN who their trademark was fighting back. And that's fine. He's in the front two rows. He can do that. But most of the people in the back of the room were there to write stories for their papers or their stations and to really let people know what was going on in a way that was meaningful to them. When you watch something like that, if you're a consumer of the news but not working in it for an outlet, you saw a lot of confrontation, some of it rude and often counterproductive, that you don't see with Biden. And I think things are changing as more is coming out with the Hunter Biden story. and other issues with Joe Biden. So I think things are changing. But also, I have to say, I mean, Donald Trump sort of invited some of the antagonism that he got.
So go into a little more detail. What can you tell us about the Trump administration's relationship with the White House press corps?
Well, first of all, there are so many great people who worked for Donald Trump. He had a number of just professional staffers who wanted to do right, believed in Trump. Some of them no longer believe in Trump, I should add. But, you know, after January 6th, a lot of that changed. But they wanted to get the story out. And I think my dealings with the Biden people happened less. So, as I said, they were really professional. A lot of the people who worked for Trump in the beginning had no press experience. So when I started covering the White House, I'd been covering politics for years. I was a conservative columnist. I had tons of sources. And then I get to the White House and like it's sort of crickets because most of the people Trump hired did not have experience dealing with the press. Hope Hicks did during the campaign. She was more of a gatekeeper. Sean Spicer became his press secretary. But remember, he had come from the RNC. So they weren't used to knowing how to deal with it. You could be rewarded for being combative with the press. And I have to say, Sean Spicer, the day he came out after the inauguration and made those remarks about this huge crowd size that just wasn't true, Trump basically undermined his own press secretary day one. And he, I think, continued to do so. I mean, we know that he watched the press conferences. We know that this mattered to him a lot. And he understands a lot of things about the press. So we know that there's an antagonism that he would especially show during certain occasions. But he knows lighting. He knows to make sure that he's going to get a shot that frames him well. He understands how the business works. Before he was president, obviously, he was a media star in reality TV. He'd always like to get in the New York papers. He loves being in the New York papers. He really has high regard for the New York Times and cares what the New York Times says. So he has a relationship that I think, you know, a lot of people who are big Trump fans see him as totally antagonistic with the press, but really he wanted good coverage and he did things to get it. He would know who he wanted to get near. And that ended up changing, of course, by the end of his administration. It was completely different. So the first Trump press conference I covered, it was before he was president. It was in Trump Tower in New York. And I mean, that was packed. And then when he takes the oath of office, and it was standing room only in that briefing room. People were just jam-packed. They're working so hard to get, it was a big story. And over time, some of that people realized, hey, I can watch the briefing from my office and I don't have to run back and it's easier for me to meet my deadline. And so you'd see fewer people showing up. And I was one of the people who was a one-person bureau. I mean, I was the only person covering the White House for the Las Vegas Review-Journal, whereas a lot of other organizations, they'll have 8-10 people or they'll have 2 or 3. You have a different kind of dynamic that way. So people are looking for different things. I think most of the people in the back of the room were looking for stories about policy and how what the president was doing would affect people. That certainly was the case during COVID too. When COVID hit, people really saw how what the White House could do affected them.
I'm curious. I spoke with Bill Barr last summer and I was just having casual conversation with him. And I asked him, did Donald Trump like the job? And Bill's response was, Donald Trump liked seeing himself on television every day, and the job gave him that.
Mm-hmm.
Do you agree?
Well, first of all, I think Bill Barr, he was just a great attorney general, and he understood Trump, good and bad, helped him in many ways by accommodating Trump when Trump had a good point with the Department of Justice, and not accommodating him when it would have been wrong. So that was one of the things that I really looked for when I was there, because when I worked at the Chronicle, I would be invited to the George W. Bush Christmas media parties. It was so fun for me. I'd come in and the press corps people, the press office people for Bush, they were just so welcoming. And it was really exciting for me that you could tell how much they loved being in the White House and they loved showing it off. And I kept thinking, when am I going to see that with Donald Trump? When am I going to see that with his staff? Because they didn't seem to get the joy in it. Donald Trump had 2 Christmas media parties in 4 years. George Bush would have two a year. He actually split them up, one more print, one more broadcast. And he would come out, you would get your picture taken with the president, but his staffers were out there. And for me, this was a great chance to get to meet a lot of his top people and just talk to them and create a relationship. So the first Christmas party that Trump gave, he basically came out, spoke and left, didn't take pictures with people, no schmoozing. And I'm thinking, he doesn't understand that, the fun part. And it actually, I think George Bush enjoyed those parties. I hear the Clintons did. I'm sure Obama did. They knew how to do that. And so I kept wondering, when am I going to see him like it? And then there are two times I've seen that person. One was they had a sports event for kids, and kids were invited from all over the country to come to the White House. It was in the South Lawn. And Donald Trump really likes kids, right? You just could see him talking with the kids and joking with them, and Sarah Sanders and all these other top people in the administration just walking over, chatting with people. And it was the moment I'd been waiting for. And the other time was take our daughters to work day. That's another thing, again, with kids. And I brought my cousin's granddaughters one year, and the kids had a great time. He had a great time. You can just tell that when the kids came in, and he was making jokes about, oh yeah, your parents, the journalists. And so he did enjoy it, but he also, I think we all know, can be rather unhappy about whether, if things do not go exactly the way he wants them to go.
So how has the White House press corps changed as far as you can see, either by your direct observation during those 5 weeks of covering the Biden administration or kind of dipping in again to the press events? How do you think it's changed in the Biden administration?
So I joke that I covered Trump for 4 years and Biden for 5 weeks. It felt like 4 years. I mean, it was just slow, and it's gotten even slower. So it's just amazing. The other day they called a lid. Calling a lid means you're telling people there'll be no appearances, no public business. They called a lid at 2:22 in the afternoon. I'm not saying that never happened with Donald Trump. It happened toward the end, but we're not near the end. And the Biden administration is just slowing down. You've watched the briefings with Karine Jean-Pierre. She seems to be getting her legs now, but people don't feel that she's answering their questions. And I frequently feel like she's not answering their questions. We've always had certain people who would sort of ask questions that would challenge the Biden people. Steve Nelson from the New York Post, Emily Gooden from the Daily Mail are two examples. But there's more pushback now. People are sort of not liking the fact that they're getting less access than they want. And it's not a love affair. If most of the press corps wanted Trump to lose and wanted Biden to win, now I don't think they care that much about what happens to Joe Biden. I don't see that. I don't see a bunch of cheerleaders anymore. There are some, not nearly as many as there were.
What did you like best about covering President Trump, and what did you like least?
President Trump. On the one hand, it was, you just almost every day you had a story handed to you on a silver platter. You would see things that people wanted to read about. He was great for newspaper sales. Love him or hate him, people just couldn't turn away. So that was great. And also, there were some issues he was quite good at. And by the way, talk about accessibility. He gave a lot of press conferences in the Rose Garden and in the East Room. I mean, he talked to the press a lot. During COVID, there were times he just came out and did the COVID briefings. And so he was accessible when he would, they call them departures and arrivals, when he gets onto a Marine One. He would talk to the press going in and out. Biden doesn't do that. He just doesn't talk to the press much at all. In fact, you saw him at the White House Correspondents' Dinner where he joked about how he's going to do what he does all the time, which is talk a little bit but not answer questions from the press. And so I feel that there are a lot of people who are feeling used about it, who feel that they're not getting what they ought to be getting, that they should be getting more information from the Biden people than they're getting. And I don't see that getting any better.
Why do you think that is? I mean, it's been a hallmark since President Biden's campaign that he was extremely isolated in some cases, and especially from the press. Why do you think it is? It's this kind of now White House policy that he simply doesn't engage the press at the level the American people are accustomed to.
Yeah. And by the way, by the end, Donald Trump wasn't talking to the press either. Again, things had deteriorated. What was the 2020 campaign like? Joe Biden campaigned from his home. He barely got out. He was not accessible. And I remember after he won, I pulled for the transition, which means he's in Wilmington, Delaware, near his home. He has an office there, and they would give briefings there. But again, I mean, the accessibility, it just wasn't there. And they've clearly decided, as many politicians do, and journalists don't like, and they don't like it for a good reason, they're just keeping everybody at bay. They're saying as little as possible. They're trying to manage what they say. And that's something that Trump's people would have loved that. I can tell you his press staff would have been really happy with that approach. Unfortunately, in their case, many times there'd be an agreement, this is what we're going to do today. And then Trump would walk out in front of the podium and tear up the script. And things would be totally different. In the beginning, covering the White House, people would ask me what my day was like. Well, I write a story, and then at 5 o'clock, I tear it up and write another one. He's so mercurial and not always consistent. People are covering Biden's gaffes, which we know there are many, but he doesn't seem fit. He doesn't seem energetic. I know they say he is. I don't see it. And that's something you wouldn't say about Donald Trump. He was always ready for a fight and always ready to tell what he thought was his story.
We're talking to former White House correspondent Deb Saunders about the current state of journalism and covering the Trump White House. This is Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. The 2023 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference features a one-hour Q&A with journalists Mark and Molly Hemingway and a presentation, Making the Case Against Cancel Culture, with Kyle Mann of the Babylon Bee. The premier conference for Christian laity is Friday, June 16th and Saturday, June 17th at Concordia University, Chicago. Find out more and register at issuesetc.org or by giving us a call, 618-223-8385, Making the Case June 16th and 17th in River Forest, Illinois. When we come back, we'll find out what Deb means by calling covering Trump like riding a roller coaster.
Throughout the 50 days of Easter, sacred music for the world. LutheranPublicRadio.org. Listen 24/7 to sacred music for the Easter season. LPR, LutheranPublicRadio.org. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for your service.
Our church loves and is grateful for those that serve our country. Operation Barnabas, part of Ministry to the Armed Forces, equips you to reach out to veterans in your community to bring Christ to those that served. Call Ministry to the Armed Forces at 314-996-1337 or email lcmschaps@lcms.org.
Thank you for your service.
Thank you.
God bless our military.
Listen to what you want, when you want. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Memoria Press is a family-run publisher of classical Christian education materials for homeschools and private schools. Every page of the Memoria Press curriculum leads students to a mastery of content, an understanding of the classical heritage of the Christian West, and an appreciation of truth, goodness, and beauty. If you're interested in learning more, visit memoriapress.com and use the coupon code LPR23. Memoria Press, saving Western civilization one student at a time. memoriapress.com.
Not everyone is comfortable with new technology. Dial A Podcast gives all generations of your congregation an easy way to hear your sermons or even devotionals and Bible studies. Once you've completed a simple one-time setup, we take care of the rest. All your congregants have to do is dial the number from any phone to listen to your latest podcast, all at no additional cost to them. Dial A Podcast. Extend the reach of your sermons. Get started at dialapodcast.com now.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking with Deb Saunders about the current state of journalism and covering the Trump White House. Deb, in your final column you wrote, covering Trump was like riding a roller coaster and covering Biden looks like running a marathon after a roller coaster ride. Thanks for joining me on the roller coaster. What did you mean by that?
Well, it was a roller coaster ride covering Donald Trump. I did it for 4 years. Most people didn't make it 4 years. A lot of people cycle in and out of being a White House correspondent. A couple years is really plenty. My last day on the job, Jen Psaki came out and kindly gave me a nice shout out and talked about how long 4 years is. And notice she's not there. Of course, it's more stressful being the press secretary. So the hours are insane. You're working all the time. I mean, Christmas, I had to watch what Trump had to say. Didn't mean I had to write about it, but it was going to be a page one story. Yes, I did. And you have to be ready for everything. In the beginning, they were sending out stuff like overnight. It was crazy. And the readers are different. Nevada went for Clinton and Biden. They won, not a squeaker, but they won. But the readers for my paper, the Las Vegas Review-Journal, tended to be Trump voters, or more than the general population. And the Trump voters are very protective. They watch everything you do. They believe that anything that's ever critical, it's because you hate him. And Trump haters are similar. They would see if you ever said anything nice about him, there's something in your story, like there are things he did well. And if you put that in a piece, they would just go crazy on you, like you were not professional. So I think covering any president is a lot of work. Covering Joe Biden is less because they're just giving out less. The hours that the press office is operating or that he's operating and talking to the press are much more condensed. The other day, they called a lid at 2:22 in the afternoon. A lid means that he's not going to be doing anything in public and people can go home if they want. There's not going to be any news out of the press office. So that's like, this is really buttoned down. I mean, the campaign that we saw where he was in his basement has continued on into the administration. And they've really decided that the less said, the better. That could be their motto. I just found that 4 years is, it can age a person. And I had a great time. It was a wonderful experience. I think about it all the time, fondly. I watched the White House Correspondents Association dinner the other night and saw my pals. It was great. But it's not something very many people can do for a long time.
To journalism in general, how do you think the 24/7 cable news, and then add in, of course, the ubiquitous news outlets that are now social media, how do you think they've impacted American journalism?
Cable news has weaponized information and politics. For one thing, the news cycle is unrelenting. There was a time, I'm sure, when if you covered the White House, before TV, before cable news, where you could be done at the end of the day, but that's gone. There, things are happening all the time. People are leaking stuff. Reporters are working their sources endlessly. So we find that the people are just bombarded with news. I don't know. I think some people are maybe thinking that they don't need all this information, that a lot of it is palace intrigue stuff. And it's about who doesn't like who in an administration. Do you care that much about that, Todd?
Not really.
I think we've trivialized ourselves. I think there's less to watch with Biden. The reason to tune into Biden sometimes is just to see if this is going to be the time where he doesn't really get a sentence out. I mean, we've seen the way he talks to people my whole life. I've been watching Joe Biden. So it's different that way. We'll see what happens with 2024. I don't know.
What is your general thoughts on a phenomenon that really did begin in earnest during the Trump administration? And that is basically the source of so many stories was Twitter, and in particular, Donald Trump's channel on Twitter.
Yeah, well, Donald Trump figured out a way to get around the media, and that was Twitter. And it's a really easy way to write a story, right? And by the way, let me just say, there are times I tried to write stories about energy from the administration. They were not always helpful. You had to work hard for every little tidbit you got. So you're working really hard to do your job of reporting and getting beyond the superficial stuff. And at the same time, the president's tweeting out stuff that just hands you a story. that everybody's going to be talking about. And you know that if somebody's listening to talk radio or watching the news, that they're all going to see it. And so that changes what the conversation is. The way that he handled the media did not make for the best journalism. But in a sense, you know, you have this whole industry out there. If there's a mass shooting and a TV station sends out their crew there, right? They're there for that story. And cable networks, they only have so much money that they can put into a story. And so that story is going to pervade everything. And of course, I think many people in the public are wondering, should they be covering these mass shootings this way? Is this good for the country? And there are business model considerations for covering the news and for covering a White House. It's expensive to cover a White House. You have to have a person there. If you want to get your reporter on the travel pool, that costs a lot of money. Even being with the pool, that's man hours that can't be spent on other things. You're sort of juggling all the time your attempts to have more access with an administration and to find out things that will be of interest to your readers.
So since Donald Trump is at this point far ahead in polling among GOP voters, do you see a scenario where Donald Trump won't be the Republican nominee for president this time around?
So this is completely wishful thinking on my part. Yes, I see a scenario where he is not the nominee. If you poll people and ask them who would you vote for, and you ask Republican primary voters, a lot of them are going to say Trump, but that doesn't mean they will do it. And I do think that he would be easier for Joe Biden or a Democrat to beat than other Republicans. And I think that Republicans want to win. I think they want the White House. So I have to think, and I've been wrong about Trump before. I didn't think he would win the Republican nomination in 2016. I didn't think he'd win the election. So, and wishful thinking was part of it because I didn't think he was fit. As it turns out, there are a lot of things he did great and that I admired. I thought he handled COVID well. I liked his economic policies and the fact that he went after regulation. But I think after January 6th, he's toxic. And it's clear as you watch what's going on with the Republican primary that a lot of presidential hopefuls feel that if they are too critical of him, that they will alienate his voters and be less likely to win the nomination. But he can't win. I don't think he can win. Or it's not a sure enough thing. Maybe he can win, but it's not a sure thing where somebody else it would be a more sure thing. But again, I am a Republican. I want to see a Republican president, and I believe that Donald Trump as a nominee would hurt that.
Deb Saunders is a syndicated columnist, a fellow with the Discovery Institute Chapman Center for Citizen Leadership. She spent more than 30 years covering politics, including as White House correspondent and columnist for the Las Vegas Review-Journal. She's host of the podcast Covering Trump. You'll find a link to Deb's podcast and her columns at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Talk on Demand Archives. Deb, thanks.
Thank you, Todd.
Joy Pullman joins us from The Federalist next to talk about abortion malpractice in Indiana. You can meet and hear journalists Mark and Molly Hemingway, LCMS President Matt Harrison, San Francisco Archbishop Salvatore Cordleone, Pastor Peter Bender of the Concordia Catechetical Academy, and Kyle Mann of the Babylon Bee at the 2023 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, Friday, June 16th and Saturday, June 17th at Concordia University, Chicago. For more information, visit issuesetc.org or call 618-223-8385.
The Lutheran Church Missouri Synod's Life Ministry is thousands of people sharing Christ's love and mercy and giving witness to our Lord's creation of life, His design for marriage and the family, and the God-given value of all human life from conception to natural death. Working with many partners, LCMS Life Ministry sponsors human care efforts that meet the needs of body and soul and provides resources and educational events for all ages. To learn more, email lifeministry@lcms.org and visit lcms.org/life.
Education and edification. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Not all churches teach the truth. This shouldn't surprise us since Jesus warned us that false teachers would arise after he ascended into heaven. So how then does a Christian find a church? By looking for her marks. The May issue of the Lutheran Witness will teach you so much more about these marks, their biblical foundations, and how to find a church marked in this way. Visit cph.org/witness to subscribe or visit our website, witness.lcms.org, to learn more. The Lutheran Witness, helping you interpret the world from a Lutheran perspective.
For your next family vacation, consider Our Beach House, a charming three-bedroom vacation rental on beautiful Siesta Key. Just off Sarasota, Florida, Siesta Key Beach, consistently voted America's best, is just 100 steps away. Whether you're watching the sunset over the Gulf of Mexico or frolicking in the warm surf, you and your family will fall in love with Siesta Key. Check us out at SiestaKeyRentalGenie.com or call Virginia at 941-266-1858.
America's tradition of liberty depends on having colleges and universities that equip young people for the responsibilities of freedom. At Concordia University Chicago, freedom is a pillar of our education. We prepare our students to live as free, self-governing citizens. I'm Dr. Rachel Ferguson, Director of the Free Enterprise Center at Concordia Chicago. I invite you to visit us. Discover what it means for freedom to become a pillar of your future. Learn more at cuchicago.edu.
This is Molly Hemingway, encouraging you to listen to my favorite podcast, Issues, Etc. Every day you get in-depth interviews with host Todd Wilkin asking expert guests substantive, thought-provoking questions on all of the important news and issues of our day. The expert guests are in culture, law, ethics, philosophy, theology, and apologetics. Expert guests, expansive topics, always extolling Christ. Issues, etc.